Hello, everybody, and welcome to the fourth episode of the Big Apple Sports Media Podcast. I'm Anthony Evangelista here with Kyle Keegan, and we've got a decent amount to talk about today. How are you, Kyle?
I'm good, Ann. I'm good. Looking forward. NBA playoffs start today. Big day. No Knicks, as usual, but excited to watch. ESPN's got like a four-game doubleheader. I have First Take on in the background. They're arguing about Kawhi and LeBron, and it feels just like spring because we're arguing about basketball players in August, and this is really fun, you know? But lots to talk about today. Brooklyn Nets, first-round series against the Toronto Raptors. You want to start on this, Ant?
Well, before we get into the Nets, I just want to say, like, this isn't New York sports-related, but how about the Phoenix Suns going 8-0 in the bubble and still not making the playoffs because the Nets couldn't close against Damian Lillard that absolutely went off on them?
If Caris LeVert hit that shot, then he would be the most hated man in Oregon. Yeah. At the end of that game. That was wide open. He'd been a stud all game long. And no hate to Caris LeVert, but if he knocked that down. And listen, like, I'll admit, I wanted to see the Blazers make the playoffs because I like Carmelo Anthony a lot. Probably my favorite basketball player. That's just me being a homer, but he is. And but it sucks. The Suns played really well. They pretty much dominated all eight games they played in. There were a couple close ones against good teams, but they were the better team in every game they played. And it really sucks that they couldn't at least snag that nine and get a chance to beat Portland. But, you know, I could see a really bright future for the Suns. Their young players really stepped up a lot more. Devin Booker's becoming a star, and bright future for Phoenix. Bright future.
But the reason why I brought that up is to actually talk about that game against the Blazers that meant so much to the Suns, because that game went back and forth the entirety of it. I mean,
LeVert with 37. I think that's his high for the bubble.
The end of the first quarter was tied. I'm pretty sure then the Blazers pulled ahead. The Nets absolutely killed them in the third quarter, and then Dame time happened in the fourth quarter. So with the Nets, like you said, Caris LeVert went off. He had, you're right, 37 points. Mm-hmm. TLC had 19, Tyler Johnson 16, Joe Harris 19. It's just a point of this team now going into Toronto because they're all in Orlando, but going into this series against Toronto, need to capitalize on these non-star players. Because
I agree. And this is here's what I'll say about it before I let you continue. I think the big difference between the Raptors and the Nets is that the Nets stars were supposed to be their depth, and that's what would concern me.
And like, look, right now I am scared of this Nets team for next season, because not rooting for them is very scary. Because you see, like, all the depth that they're gonna have once Dinwiddie, KD, Kyrie, all these great players, DeAndre Jordan, come back. Because right now, if they're making the playoffs and playing at an exceptionally high level without their top four players or four out of five, whatever it is, that is a very scary team for next season. And that's what people were saying all over Twitter after the game the other night. Mm-hmm. This team is going to be extremely scary next season. So you know what? For this season, for this upcoming matchup against the Raptors, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull it off. Honestly, with this Nets team, the Raptors are an extremely good team, but they obviously don't have Kawhi anymore. And even though they've proved that they could win without him, they're still missing an extremely key part of their offense in their playoff push last year. And as long as someone like a Jared Allen can lock down Pascal Siakam in the paint, LeVert's probably going to be on Lowry. I think this is a very good playoff matchup, and I would not be surprised if the Nets at least push to pull an upset.
Here's one thing I have to say about the Raptors. So typically when a team wins a title the year after, there's not much motivation. There's not there's not that same drive because you've already won. This Raptors team, they still have something to prove. They need to prove. They want to prove that these are all-star caliber, good NBA, like guys like Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam. They want to be able to win without Kawhi. So they have that little chip on their shoulder that people have been doubting them ever since day one, again, despite the fact that they were NBA champions. So this isn't going to be one of those series where one team is lacking in the mental edge, because I could see both of these teams having great pushes for motivation. The next step, they're pushing for maybe a contract, a spot on the team next year when all the stars come back, just something like that. And then the Raptors, who came in as the 2 seed, are the favorites to win the series, are trying to win back-to-back titles, this time without their best player from last year. So from that perspective, I think it's really interesting.
The Raptors had an exceptional bubble run. I'm pretty sure they only lost they dropped their first three, and then they only lost one after that. So
they went 4-4?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Or no, actually.
I'll check. More.
But regardless, the Raptors have shown that they haven't come just to play around. This Raptors team is – I see, like, it's hard to explain, but I believe that this Raptors team is exceptional if they play the game right. And that's why they're so lucky to have a coach like Nick Nurse, because Nick Nurse has done an amazing job this past year and the year before proving that this team isn't something you want to mess around with. So going over the Raptors roster, I mean, they're obviously going to have more players that play well than others. That's just how the game works. But you have people like Pascal Siakam, Serge Ibaka, Norman Powell, Kyle Lowry. That's a solid at least 4 players that could get to the paint and score the ball, players that could shoot around the perimeter, players that are going to be able to out-rebound your center and stuff like that. And especially with this Nets team where it's young, they don't have some of their experienced veterans like DeAndre Jordan, Spencer Dinwiddie, that kind of thing. This Raptors team can be dangerous at times, and I think that's very scary coming in this series for the Nets.
Something for the Raptors is that they haven't been Something about the Nets is that, specifically in the bubble as well, they haven't been a fantastic defensive team. And the Raptors don't have a clear-cut go-to scorer that you can see every time, not like an Anthony Davis or a James Harden, but they have Pascal Siakam, who led their team with 21 points a game. And then they have 5 other guys who had at least 11 points per game. So I don't know if it bodes well for the Nets or not, that there's going to be scoring coming from everywhere, as opposed to just a focus like, if you lock down this guy, you're probably going to shut down the offense. You know what I mean? They have a lot of guys that can score from a lot of places, and I think that that makes them very dangerous, because with the Nets have struggled on defense. They allowed 134 against the Blazers. I think they allowed like 149 against Boston. I don't know if it bodes well or not that their scoring comes from everywhere. I don't know if that makes it easier for them to defend. And to top off that, they have the second best defensive rating in the league. So if the Nets want to step up, they have to do something similar to what the Raptors are doing. They have to spread the scoring, because they also don't have that guy that you can go to. They don't have Kyrie Irving. They don't have Kevin Durant. Caris LeVert has proven that he can be a really good all-star caliber scorer throughout the bubble, but I feel like if the Raptors can crack down on that early enough in the series, the Nets could have some trouble.
Completely. And you know what, like you said, I think right now Caris LeVert is, if you want to say that there's a star main player type thing that they're going to push the ball through, it's going to be Caris LeVert.
For sure.
Because since Kyrie went down back in, I think it was February, LeVert's just been on another level. And he hasn't been an all-star whatever, but he's had a great bubble season. I think he's averaging 25-7 or something like that, 25-7-5, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And you know what? This Raptors defense is very good, and I think that – see, here's the thing. I'm kind of in a dilemma here, because like, I don't know if I want the Nets to win.
Because yeah, I feel
as a Knicks fan, I'm kind of just stuck in like, okay, it's Brooklyn, so same New York, whatever. Do I root for the New York team, or do I want to have the Knicks be the only like the solid team in New York. And obviously the Knicks haven't been solid in the past few years. But see, that's my kind of issue right there. But look, Toronto can space the floor on defense very well. And that's going to be very hard to get around for this Nets team, especially because they're a very young shooting team. They're not getting in the paint as much as they should be, except with players like Jared Allen and stuff like that. But even then, it's not going to be easy to get in through.
Yeah, Seattle, I was going to say Jared Allen, I think he'll be the X factor in the series if the Nets win. I can see him. Is Gasol on the Raptors still, or am I stupid?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that matchup, him and Gasol, that's going to be tough for the sole purpose of the fact that, like, Gasol is a veteran player. He's been there before. He's won before. He's on a team that's been meshed together a little bit longer. But if Jared Allen can beat Gasol in that matchup, I really like the Nets' chances, because that's something that most people probably wouldn't expect him to take that matchup. And if he can do that and take his defense to that second level that we've seen little glimpses of, then the Nets' chances are just as good as the Raptors.
So you said that Jared Allen was your kind of X factor for this series. I'm going to say that Joe Harris is the Nets' X factor in this series, just because he can be an extreme powerhouse on this offense. When he gets hot, he is going to score dozens of points very easily, just because, I mean, he's a sharp shooter. He's great behind the line. And as long as he's able to make his shots, the Nets are going to have a field day if he's able to do that kind of stuff.
Here's what I'll say about Joe Harris. If he can put up, let's say, 22 a game in this series, that would be huge secondary scoring. Like, I know that's asking a lot, but I'm looking at his stats from the bubble right here, and he's got a game of 27, a game of 25, a game of 21. So I don't know who's going to be on him, but if he keeps shooting, then I agree. If he's their secondary scorer, that would be huge.
Yeah, and if there's somebody like a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or someone guarding him,
TLC.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to be able to stop if he's – that's going to not – I don't know if that's going to be able to stop Joe Harris once he gets hot.
Yeah. Thing about Joe Harris is that he's just – I don't want to compare him to, like, Ray Allen, but he's similar in that role where he's, like, more of a spot-up shooter, secondary scorer. He'll hit big shots when you need it. And if he can step into that role like he has for most of the season, that would be huge for the Nets, because Caris LeVert has been their best scorer in the bubble, and there's no disputing that. He's been their best player overall. He put 37 up on the Blazers on a Thursday night. And if they're going to be locking him down, the reliance on Joe Harris to get you points is going to be so much greater. So as long as he's getting open, doing that off-ball stuff, hitting his three-pointers, getting, like I said, 22 a game, which might be a lot to ask of him, but that would be the threshold that I think you almost need if you're going to beat a team as good and as defensive-minded as Toronto.
Now, I'm going to say the Raptors' weakness, which if the Nets capitalize on it, which they haven't really done too much this season, but if they find this kind of loophole, they could definitely get some extra points and maybe an extra few wins in the series. Offensive rebounds.
Yeah, and that's why I think Jared Allen is so huge. I think he averaged just under 10 rebounds a game in the series, and that's why I'm saying he's my X factor, because if he can get rebounds like that, because he's your starting center, that changes so much. But keep going. I want to hear.
But genuinely, like, the Raptors with both offensive and defensive rebounding this season have underperformed in that category, and although they've been able to make up for it in other ways, it hasn't been a strong suit for them. So if this Nets team, if Jared Allen and the people in the paint can grab offensive rebounds and get some putback points, get some second chance points, that'll make a huge difference in this game, because with this team, they're going to need every point that they could get, pretty much, because this is going to be a very tight series, especially with this Toronto defense. So I think that it's going to be very important that they could get those second chance efforts and get those possible 2-3 points on a possession that should have ended up in zero.
I agree. And second chance opportunities, which you mentioned, I think that they're going to be huge in this series, especially with the Raptors, with their just defensive minded side of the game, which isn't all that common in the NBA right now. But to go along with the Raptors' very good defense, I think the weakness for the Nets might be that they didn't have a bad defensive rating in the regular season, but in the bubble, not great. So, and they played teams that have been better offensively, like the Celtics, like the Blazers, and they have given up a lot of points. And if the Raptors can take advantage of all of the defensive mishaps of Brooklyn in the past 2 weeks, then their chances become a lot better. They did hold the Clippers to only 120 in that win. And I say only 120 just because they won. But if you give up 120 in a loss, it becomes more of a problem. So I'm less worried, if I'm a Nets fan, about the scoring and more about the defense, despite the fact that the Raptors have a great defense and a pretty good offense, just because that's what the weakness has been.
I get that. Yeah, that's true.
So I
want you to make a prediction right now. Series of seven, who wins this one? Nets or Raptors?
So I've been thinking about this a lot this week. Obviously, I've been looking more into the Nets than I usually do because the Knicks are not in, so I can't look at them. And I really like what Caris LeVert's been doing. I really do. I don't know who they're going to put on. I don't know if they're going to put Siakam on him. I don't know if they're going to
they wouldn't put Siakam on him.
Lowry on him. I don't know who's going to defend him. But if he continues to score, I could see the Nets snagging a couple games. If Jared Allen gets those rebounds, if Joe Harris is hitting the shots, I could see them snagging a couple games. But with that being said, and I did this 2 weeks ago when I said that the Nets sucked, I'm going to pick the Raptors to win this series in 6 games solely because I think that they still have something to prove without Kawhi Leonard. There's a lot of guys on that team that are still hungry to win. There hasn't been a single moment where I thought, oh, the Raptors are in a championship hangover all season long. And they played okay in the bubble so far, but for the most part, their key elements haven't skipped a beat. They've won 4 straight. So I'm going to have to pick the Raptors in 6. I still think they're the better team. I think that the Nets will give them more trouble than a lot of people are thinking. But, yeah, my final prediction is going to be Raptors in 6 before game 1 at 4 o'clock today.
I respect that. I'm going to say something a little similar, just kind of backing on what you said. This entire series depends on LeVert, Allen, their ability to kind of get in that paint, score, 3-point percentage for Joe Harris. With this Raptors team maybe limiting Siakam, Garrett Temple may not be able to score as much. Lowry is more of a playmaking guard anyway. So I'm probably going to have to go Raptors in 7. Or maybe, yeah, probably Raptors in 7. I'll say that. Because
that'd be awesome.
it would be a really good series. But I could see this Nets team snagging 3 games from this Raptors because, look, the Nets are decent under pressure. I mean, you can't really look at that Trailblazers game and say that they didn't perform well because they did. It's just a point of one last shot didn't really hit because Damian Lillard is absolutely insane. But, yeah, I'm going to say Raptors in 7.
And a lot of these Nets guys, I think people are forgetting, a lot of these guys were on the team last year when they had their asses handed to them by the Sixers. They lost and they dominated game 1 and then they proceeded to lose 4 straight. And a lot of those games were close games, man. And they didn't have Kyrie wasn't on the team. Neither was Kevin Durant. And I know they had D'Angelo Russell, and I know they had Spencer Dinwiddie, but I still think that there are guys on that team that because now they had that learning experience year, and I say that in air quotes, that they're ready to step up and take the next step. Now, that doesn't always happen, But I'm saying that to overlook the fact that these guys have a year of, under their belt of playoff experience on a Brooklyn Nets team that was extremely fun to watch last year. These guys were depth pieces that have stepped up so far. The Nets went 5-3 in the bubble. And I can see them making some noise. So my prediction, final prediction, Raptors in six. But I'm hoping for Nets in seven, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, if the Nets move to the next round, we'll have another episode to talk about their second round matchup. But regardless, we are going now to switch sports. We're going to move from Orlando to the baseball field. So
you're all right, you first today.
Me first?
I don't know. Your choice. I mean, my team's winning, but...
Okay, well, my team is not. Let's go with the Mets. Okay. So right now, the Mets have dropped their last three to the Phillies. They got swept, gave up six runs each game, and then I'm pretty sure they scored 5-2-2. They are currently 9-14. They did a pretty good job. So the last time we spoke, the Nationals absolutely destroyed the Mets 16-4. Mm-hmm. And since then, they've lost one more to the Nationals the day after. They lost 2-1. Then they won their next two, 11-6 and 8-2.
Yeah.
Which just shows you, like, one of my main points last week was inconsistency. And that just shows, like, you can't lose 16-4 to a team and then come out 2 days later and beat them 11-6 and then the day after 8-2. Or it just shows you, like, how odd this team is. There's no other way to put it. But besides,
here's my gripe with the Mets. I saw this stat. They're now, after Sunday's loss in Philadelphia, 0-12 when trailing after six innings, 0-12 when trailing after seven innings, and 0-10 after trailing after eight. So the problem with the Mets is that they have, A, not hit with runners in scoring position, which is a huge problem because overall their average and their on-base percentage has been in the top 10 in the league. And second, they don't hit in the late innings. The Mets last year were an extremely fun team to watch, despite the fact that they didn't make the playoffs. They were walking off games left and right. They kept coming back. They had that fight. And this year, it just seems like if the Mets are trailing, and it doesn't seem that way, it's true. If the Mets are trailing after five or six innings, they're not going to win the game. And it's not because of the bullpen. It's because whenever the team gets down, it seems like they're dead. They have yet to prove that they have any fight in any of these games.
No, I completely get that. And you know what? The one thing that I will say, not the one thing, but one of the main things that I'll say about this Mets team that gave me a lot of hope, not really a lot of hope, but just a point of, hey, that's a positive thing for the Mets. We don't really get that too often, is the impact of backup catcher Nito in the game on Thursday.
Nito, yeah. The two home runs on Thursday, right?
Say that again?
He hit two home runs on Thursday, right?
Yep, that's six awesome. RBIs. Insane. Look, I mean, whenever there's a player like that that kind of just breaks out of nowhere, it's very, very fun. Because, you know,
what I think was a bit deflating for the Mets this weekend is that they split with Washington, which was good, after getting destroyed on Monday and then losing again Tuesday in a tough 2-1 loss. They ended up splitting that series, which after those first 2 days, you have to consider that a positive. Maybe you're getting on the right foot. DeGrom Day Friday, boom, neck injury. They haven't put him on the IL yet. But when you go from Jacob DeGrom starting that game to Walker Lockett, like,
yeah,
that set the tone for the whole Philly series. And then they got walked off. Bryce Harper hit an RBI single. And then it seemed Saturday and Sunday like they just didn't really want to play.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And, yeah, the Mets pitching now is all of a sudden absolutely abysmal. Just because, yeah, you said the thing about DeGrom. Now that pretty much every single player that the Mets expected to be a part of this team. So if you go back, let's say, 8-10 months and say, yeah, what are your expectations for the Mets next season pitching-wise? You got DeGrom. You have Stroman. You have Syndergaard still. That's a very high – that's very high praise for three of
– that's as good a top three as any in the MLB.
Exactly. Those are three top 10, top 15 pitchers in this MLB, at least at one point. So now Syndergaard's out for the year most likely. That's just how – I mean, that we knew that for a while.
Yeah, but we knew that back in March.
Now, DeGrom's having his issues with his injuries. We don't know where that's going to stand in a few weeks. With Stroman, he's completely out for the season, decided to opt out a few days after Cespedes, which mm-hmm. was a very big hit. So now you're left with these players that nobody knew before the start of the season. I mean, obviously you have players like Rick Porcello and all that, and mm-hmm. it's just a point of there's no more hope. Like, as a Mets fan, I don't tend to have a lot of hope in the first place, mm-hmm. but there's always some at the beginning of the season, like, okay, this might be a good year. This might be a year that we could actually kind of...
Especially with how last year ended. Because mm-hmm. last year, they played really well from exactly. in August and September and late July. And they kept their pieces together. They got veteran guys in Waka and Porcello. They had their key three in DeGrom, Syndergaard, Stroman. Hopefully, Steven Matz was going to show up somewhere. And so far this season, newsflash, he has not. Even though they've needed him even more, he's had a much more bolstered role because of the injuries and opt-outs and such, and he still hasn't stepped up. And so far this year, especially with the 18 playoff, it was looking hopeful, and now they're 9-14. I don't know what the top eight is in the National League right now, but I'd assume that the Mets are not in it nope. and are probably a couple games behind,
the Mets
probably having to play catch-up with a lot of teams. And just like that, you're in the same position that you were in every year. They're in that in-between. They're in limbo. Their key players aren't stepping up. And I'm telling you, man, if DeGrom gets that start Friday and they win in Philly, I don't know if they sweep. But if they don't lose that heartbreaker on Friday, which I saw a lot of Mets fans on Twitter calling it the worst loss of the year, the most frustrating loss maybe because they lost games by like 15 runs. But – like the most frustrating loss of the year, and then have to play two more in Philadelphia, which is always, which is never fun. And if you get swept, now you're 9-14. You're in last place. The Marlins, like, the Mets are playing like a fifth place team right now. They just are.
And right now, I'm looking at the National League standings. The Mets are currently 7 games back of first place, 8th. Spot is the Diamondbacks, who are 4.5 games out. So right now, the Mets are currently 2.5 games out of 8th place in this National League. They have the 3rd worst record in the National League in terms of standings.
That's realistically bad. For the Mets, like, this is just, it's going to sound dumb because of how simple it is. You just have to play better. Like, just have to play better.
Because they have a chance.
They're still in the race. We're talking like this is the Mets eulogy, which it is not. They played not great again this week. They had a really rough weekend. But I still feel like this team should be good enough to get an 8 seed or a 7 seed. There's no reason why, like, if they're healthy. Like, I feel like the story of the season has to be the non-hitting in the clutch and late in games. And the fact that, like, every team gets injuries, I would know that very well the last 2 years because I'm a Yankees fan. Like, DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Stroman opting out, that's tough. And it shows the Mets' depth hasn't been incredible. And it's just not great, you know? And yeah. They have the Marlins this week, 4 games in Miami. See, the Marlins are in first place for some reason, and we literally had an episode 2 weeks ago about how the Marlins might have ruined the MLB season, knock on wood. Hasn't happened yet. But, man, these 4 are going to be huge. If DeGrom can get a start, that would be enormous. David Peterson stepping up again, maybe. I mean, Steven Matz is 0-4 with a 9 ERA. That is just not acceptable because this guy – yeah, like. Steven Matz can't be doing that. Like, that's just – I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, you can't do that. That's just
if
not good enough.
If you're in the MLB, you can't be having a 9 ERA. And look, okay, so with the Mets right now, I haven't lost all hope altogether. I mean, there's still obvious – there's, what, 37 games or something like that left?
You got to believe.
And look, so right now I just read off the National League – how they're 7 games back of first place and how they're currently 3rd last in the National League. But that's right now with a lot of fluctuating records. And I say that because right now the Cardinals are technically in the playoffs, even though they're 4-4.
Yeah.
So the Phillies are 8-9. They've played 7 less games than everyone else. So it's just a point of once all the games kind of get played and there's less of a disconnect between some of the teams, like with the Marlins only playing, I think, what is it?
I think they have like 5 or 6 games less, and then the Cardinals are obviously a mess.
So there's obviously going to be some separation between teams because of that scheduling and everything with Corona. But, I mean, the Mets right now, 2.5 games back of 8th place isn't a terrible spot to be in.
It's
still very early in the season. We're just about...
We're like a third of the way.
Yeah, we're over a third of the way. It's still possible that they could get a spot. Right now, they are setting themselves up to be in a position where they will not get a spot. But if their play kind of turns around, it's definitely possible. So,
yeah.
Right now, yeah, like you said, they're going into Miami. They play the Yanks right after. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a scary series because I don't think that the Mets are going to win that.
Simply put, and I know I already said this, and it sounds so rudimentary, but they just have to play better. Like, these guys are good hitters. Pete Alonso is a good hitter. Jeff McNeil, I saw that he was taken out the other day. Is he still not playing?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, so, like, I'll exclude him. JD Davis, he's a good hitter. Like, these guys have hit before, and it's weird that last year they played like they had the clutch hitting, they had the clutch gene, all these young players, and now it seems like it's just not there. I mean, McNeil's still day to day. He got an at bat yesterday.
Yeah, he got one.
That's encouraging.
Exactly. So he's not like gone. He's not done for the count.
And then there's guys like Andrés Giménez. Like a young guy stepping up. Luis Guillorme, he's been okay. Like Dom Smith, bright spot. But it's got to be guys like Pete Alonso, guys like Robinson Cano, who's been like, okay. Michael Conforto, these guys who have been there on the team before and have consistently hit in the past who aren't performing right now, they're more so the problem than anyone else. Like the injury bug is what it is, okay? It is what it is. You got to be able to fight back from that. And the pitching, the bullpen's looked – not bad, you know? Like,
and it's been better. I mean, yeah. It's been better
there's
than
definitely it has. Some encouraging signs. It just comes down to right now, I think the biggest thing is what I said at the top of the Mets topic is that they're not hitting in late innings and they're not hitting with runners in scoring position. And if they had maybe 2 or 3 at-bats go differently this year, the Mets are at 500 and are right in the middle of it. And the biggest problem with them being 2.5 games back is that they have a lot of teams to leapfrog to. That's more so the problem than the distance. Yeah,
definitely.
But, I mean, yeah, like I said, if the Mets have like 3 or 4 at-bats go differently this year, they're a second or third place team and they're right in it. And we're talking about how the Mets are fighting with injuries. And now instead, the narrative is once again, the Mets are choking and blaming it on the injuries. And I said it last week, but it's true. It's put up or shut up time for the Mets. They need to start winning games consistently at some point before it's too late because we're getting there. It's the middle of August. And, that's my piece on the Mets.
Well, look, with the Mets right now, they're in a division with the Marlins and the Braves at the top of it. And then the Phillies and the Nationals both are around the same spot. Phillies are 8-9, Nationals 8-11. So this Mets team definitely, like you were saying with the leapfrog thing, if they wanted to try to go for that second division spot now with the whole playoff, whatever, it's definitely possible. It's not very plausible, but it could happen. Depending on how well this series goes against the Marlins, if they're able to get at least 2, maybe. I'm not going to hope for...
I was going to say, my bold prediction is the Mets are taking 3 out of 4.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's my bold prediction. The Mets are taking 3 out of 4 this weekend.
If that happens this weekend, then the Marlins would be 10-9 after that. Mets would be 12-15, which would make a very different cause for the standings.
Let's just do it one game at a time. They got
of course.
Coming tonight. He'll give you a couple innings, but that's more so of a bullpen game. Peterson really needs to step up on Tuesday.
Completely.
And that's DeGrom's place on Wednesday. Fingers crossed he's not dealing with anything too major so he can pitch.
Exactly. And look, I'm excited for next week's episode because we have the Mets and Yankees series recap. We got the Subway Series recap.
Mm-hmm.
That ends Sunday afternoon, and we will record Sunday night. So that'll be a fun topic Sunday to talk about. But you know what? Now that we're talking about that, let's switch over. Let's go to Yankee Stadium.
Okay. So the Yankees are winning games, and I'm happy about that. Don't get me wrong. The Yankees have won 9 in a row against the Red Sox. The Yankees have won 14 out of 15 against the Red Sox. They've won 14 out of 15 at home. All really impressive. The Yankees are 15-6, and they're in first place. I'm concerned about the fact that the Yankees' three best hitters are on the IL right now, and they have a series against Tampa Bay this week, who are chasing us. And last night they put up 4, and like they played the Red Sox. The Red Sox stink, which I'm loving, by the way. They are not a good baseball team this year. So the Yankees are playing well, and I don't know. I'm just sick of this next man up mentality that the Yankees are forced to have the last 2 years now. Like, they put Judge on the IL. I don't know if you saw this, but he says he's fine.
So that's a very interesting situation. I don't know what's going to happen with that.
He said he felt 100% when they talked to him yesterday. He's resuming baseball activities today. So I'm nowhere near concerned with him. But this was a guy that was in the MVP race like 3 days ago, and they put him on the IL for what seems like almost no reason. And it's just really frustrating. And DJ LeMahieu, like, sprained thumb, hopefully no surgery. Hopefully that's only 10 days. But, I mean, just really frustrating stuff, man. Like, I know I shouldn't be complaining too much for a fan of a team that roots for, like, a first place. I root for a first place team. I root for a perennially, like, good competitive team.
Must be nice.
It's just frustrating to watch a team, like – that, like, I love these depth guys. I really do. And they're making all the difference. But I would rather I want to see Aaron Judge on the field. I want to see Giancarlo Stanton on the field. I want to see DJ LeMahieu, who I don't have a gripe with because this is his first injury. I also stood with the Yankees. I want to see these guys on the field. And they got a big that hopefully they can pick up the sweep tonight against Boston. I mean, since I'm sounding all cocky about it, like, I'm not really all that concerned. I'm pretty confident that they'll win tonight. And even if they lose, that'll be frustrating. But, like, 3 out of 4 against the Red Sox, no matter how bad they are, you'll always take that.
Exactly.
The starting pitching's looked okay. Gerrit Cole shoved on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Paxton looked better Saturday night. Like, okay. Like, he's not there yet.
Exactly.
And J-Hap, knock on wood, looked okay.
Look, I just got to say, this Yankees team has an extreme home field advantage, which I wouldn't really expect with something with no fans. But right now, the Yankees are 9-0 at home, and they're 6-6 on the road. And that's an extreme huge difference. So having that kind of advantage in the – I didn't think that home field advantage was going to be a thing this season, to be completely honest, where, I mean, obviously you're going to be more accustomed to the ballpark and that kind of thing. But I mean, with fans not being there, that kind of thing, I didn't think that this would make as big of a difference. I didn't think that there was going to be as big as a disconnect between a home record and away record. But the Yankees are proving me wrong.
To be fair, 6 of those games are against the Red Sox, who are the worst team in the American League. Like, I'm very happy nice that I didn't say that.
I was going to say, I'm sure that you're very glad to say that the Red Sox are the worst team.
2018, and I know I have a Red Sox fan friend who listens to this podcast, is ancient history, so stop bringing that up. Because here's what I'll say about the Red Sox, because now you got me going. In 1919, the Boston Red Sox traded their best player, Babe Ruth, after winning the championship the year before that. In 2019, the Boston Red Sox traded Mookie Betts, their best player, a year after winning a World Series championship. So I'm not saying the Red Sox are going to go 86 years without winning a title. Would I love that? Absolutely. But with the Yankees, who are perennially just set up for success for at least the next 10 years before they have to retool, probably. Or, like, they'll be retooling along the way, but they have their core. And they have prospects. The Blue Jays, who are going to be filthy once they get a few pieces in a couple of years. The Rays, who are always just sneaky good. And the Orioles, who are somehow fighting for a playoff spot. The Red Sox are going to stink for the next few years at least.
Well, I'm sure that you're very glad to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a relief. Like, I'll tell you what, it's something, because this has never happened in my entire life. Because, like, I was born in 2003. I was born in a Red Sox-dominated era of baseball history. This is the first time in my life when I've looked at the Red Sox, even in, when they've had stinker years, and I just haven't been scared of them in any way, shape, or form. And I love that so much. It is such a relief. Like, it's not even a rivalry anymore. Even if the Red Sox win tonight, 6-1 in the first seven games, and the Yankees in first and the Red Sox in last, like, come on. Like, this is stuff that hasn't happened since, like, the 90s. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's not a Red Sox era. Like, the Red Sox are done. But back to the Yankees, 15-6, one more game against Boston, three games against Tampa this week, then the Mets series. I'm hoping the Yankees can take two out of three from Tampa and win tonight, obviously. They'll be 18-7 headed into the Subway series next weekend. And, the Yankees are playing well. I'm more so concerned about their injuries.
As you should.
That's my thing. I want them to stay healthy. If they can stay healthy, they're as good as anyone.
That's true. And now they're going – are they going in? No, they're at home against Tampa.
We lost 3 out of 4 to Tampa. So we have three with the Rays at Yankee Stadium.
Okay, so that's not terrible. I mean, hopefully, as someone that's rooting for the Yankees, you are going to expect them to win at least two, which is definitely possible.
My prediction is I think they'll take 2 out of 3. I think our probables are Tanaka, Cole, and Paxton, which I like a lot.
Expect at least 2 wins out of that. Yeah. But this whole Aaron Judge situation, now that he's on the IL, that I don't know what's going to happen with that. I mean, that's scary. And obviously he's not going to miss like an insane amount of time just because he's very clear that he's not hurt immensely. But I mean, that's just an interesting situation just because of everything going on.
I think that it's more of a we can never be too careful perspective for Cashman and Boone and the Yankee brass. But because we are like, let's be realistic. Aaron Judge has a past. He has been injured for significant periods of time the last two seasons. So you play 8 games in 6 days like Aaron Judge did, and you come away with some lower body soreness. Like, it makes sense for the Yankees to be like, oh, yeah, like, we need to get on top of this quick. Like, yeah, duh. The frustrating part was when Aaron Boone said he was fine, and then the next day he's just not in the lineup.
Yeah.
Just say he has lower body soreness. Just say it. And then put him on the IL immediately if that's what you have to do. And then for Aaron to come out yesterday and say, man, I feel 100% starting baseball activities tomorrow. I feel like I could have played today. I feel like I could have played yesterday. I feel like I could have played Friday. Listen to your players, man. Like, this is a guy who, like, he's the face of the Yankees. He might be the face of the Major League Baseball because of how popular he is. Like, Mike Trout is the best player in the league, but if Aaron Judge walks into a bar, you know who Aaron Judge is, you know?
Of course.
He's 6'7". He plays for the New York Yankees. He hits a lot of home runs. That, you know, like, that's not all he does, but, like, Aaron Judge is the guy right now. He's kind of like Derek Jeter in that sense. But, that's frustrating. DJ LeMahieu, hopefully the Yankees don't fumble that either. He's on the 10-day IL. Hopefully it's only 10 days. Hopefully we're not being lied to. Hopefully the Yankees didn't fumble the bag again like they did with Judge, kind of, because if Judge says he can be on the field, he should be on the field. I know that there's no point in being stupid. The apprehension makes sense. The Yankees are still in first place without him, but they have a big series against Tampa, and it's frustrating that the Yankees' two best players aren't going to be playing. And Giancarlo Stanton, who we talked about his injury last week, he's such a good baseball player. He just needs to find a way to stay on the field. That's so frustrating. You're running the bases. You're a professional athlete. Come on, guy. Like, got to be better.
I get that.
So, Yeah. Yankees, you would think that they're losing the way I've been talking. They've won five in a row.
Yeah,
they're
15-6. I was going to say, it's a little weird. You're very critical of them, but they've been playing pretty decent the past few
years. I'm not critical of the team as much as I'm critical of the front office
slash
annoyance about injuries, you know. I think that they're playing well with what they have, just like last year. The Yankees have, alongside with the Dodgers, the best depth in the major leagues. They're up there. They're definitely top three in depth. And the example of that is Mike Ford, the pride of Princeton. I love that guy. He had three RBIs, including a two-run homer, which would eventually be the game winner. So guys like that stepping up and getting big hits for the Yankees is always just fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I like that. As much as I enjoy that, I'd much rather see Aaron Judge competing for an MVP out there. That's just what I want to see, because I feel like he has a legitimate chance. And the fact that he's going to be on the shelf now for 10 days is frustrating.
Understandable. That's fair. Yeah. All right, so now, you know what? I think that's enough for today.
Yeah. Important news update, though. If the Knicks win the draft lottery on Thursday night,
9%
chance, we will be putting out an emergency pod talking about the Knicks winning the lottery. If they don't, let's say, what if they get top three? Then what's the plan?
We'll see. It depends on the reaction. Depends on who.
Yeah, tentative. I say let's both record our reactions if we can, because I recorded my Lafreniere reaction, and we're not putting that out there because there's way too many cuss words. But we'll see. I think that hope for the Knicks. Hopefully that Madison Square Garden charm stays in the cards. I guess if that happens, we'll be talking. Regardless of when the next episode is, the beginning of the Nets series, Yankees Mets Subway Series preview / review. We haven't really had football news lately, and they're in camp, right?
Yeah, they're starting camp, but there really hasn't been too much. I mean, Jets signed Chris Hogan, nothing like spectacular, nothing huge, but you know, hopefully there'll be some more news by next week. I mean, next week we have a lot to talk about.
Good. No, hopefully only good news, because right now the season's still happening, which is what we want. So,
yeah, definitely. So we'll see with that, but watch for an emergency pod. I'll be watching the draft lottery from work when I hope so. I'll try to get my reaction though. But
I've been on vacation for 2 weeks. I'm at Long Beach Island in Jersey. So shout out Jersey. But, that's pretty much all we have for today.
Yeah, so that's all the time we have for today. I'm Anthony Evangelista here with Kyle Keegan, and this has been episode 4 of the Big Apple Sports Media Podcast. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, guys.